Our sponsors, Bison Beer, are back in the game after opening their beach bar down at Sea Lanes. Located between the Palace Pier and Marina, it's the perfect place for a socially distanced pint of beer beside the seaside. Join them for some laid-back celebrations in a deck chair. Now Brighton can pretty much relax in the Premier League. And let them know you're fans of Football, the Albion and me for 10% off your drinks.
This is Football, the Albion and me with Richard Newman.
Hello, welcome to Football, the Albion and me. I'm Richard Newman. This is episode 12. And honestly, the original plan was to stop here for a little while to work on series 2. But I'm really thankful for the positive response this podcast has had so far. So we're going to keep going. I can't stress enough how much of a difference it makes with those likes, shares, retweets and reviews. Please do keep them coming. It really does help in getting this podcast to a wider audience. So this is the podcast which talks to Brighton and Hove Albion favourites about their all-round career and asks them to pick a five-a-side team made up of their teammates in jumpers for goalposts. And my guest this week is former Albion captain Dean Hammonds, who had two spells at the club and was great company. The interview was recorded in April. Dean's since been featured in articles for The Athletic and The Argus. He went into depth on the intimidating dressing room he experienced at the start of his Brighton career and what an honour it was to be skipper. That celebration while playing for Southampton, being part of a Leicester squad which laid the foundations for that miracle Premier League title and a possible comeback. Enjoy.
Follow Football, the Albion and me on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
Dean, thank you so much for joining us on Football, the Albion and me.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Before we get stuck in, we have to tackle the elephant in the room. You're at Worthing and we're storming to promotion to National League South. Obviously, that season was cancelled because of coronavirus. How have you all responded to that?
Yeah, obviously, like, it's a difficult situation because, the Worthing players, Adam Hinchwood, the manager, were having such a good season, top of the league. Looked like they're going to get promoted, and rightly so. But unfortunately, that's not happened now. The season's been cut short. That's finished now. And it's been probably, I would say, difficult for the players. But I was only in there 3 weeks, but they seem like such a good group of players, young players, hungry. I could imagine, only knowing Hinch for a long time, that would just spur them on for next season to get promoted, keeping the squad together to push that again next year.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually. So, will you be involved?
Oh, well, that's a conversation, a decision for Adam Hinch. I mean, we've known each other a long time. It was a matter of me just going in, doing a bit of training, see if I could move my feet again, be around the younger boys, and in any way try and help them get over the line. I don't think I was there to play, to be honest. Maybe sit on the bench, come on a little bit here and there, just be around the place and around the training. Twice, three times a week. So I think that was my main thing. It was great for me as well because I've been involved in football for a couple of years and it was nice feeling the atmosphere, the banter again, being in the dressing room, kicking a ball again. So I think it worked on all fronts. So we'll see what next season brings.
Yeah. Have you missed it a lot then?
I hadn't, if I'm honest.
No?
I hadn't. There was, I mean, when I first finished, I really did miss it and I struggled, if I'm honest, when I finished playing because... More because I struggled because, and this must sound silly, it was my decision. It wasn't a decision that through injury or lack of fitness or any other reason, I made the choice to step away for a little while and couldn't get back in, unfortunately. And that's the reality of it. But after I dealt with that, I didn't miss it. And then for some reason, I don't know why it was, nothing triggered it, but I don't know, probably 6-7 weeks ago. Well, more than that now, I suppose, probably 2 months ago, I just had a bit of an itch. And I thought, you know what? I'm still fit. I love my fitness. I had no injuries. I was never quick, so I never lost any pace. So, and I give Hinch a little call and said, look, could I come in and do a bit of training? And he was very welcoming and he allowed me to come in.
Right, let's get stuck into the podcast. And as always, we'll start at the very beginning. So, born in Hastings, what was life like in your household growing up?
Great, had a great upbringing, normal family, mum and dad and sister, very sport related, we all love sport, so yeah, I was introduced to sport and football, always encouraged to play every sport, and that's what it was really, a happy family that all I can remember is kicking a ball around really.
And school life, what was that like?
School was okay. I wasn't the most motivated at school, put it that way. I played every sport at school to try and get out of lessons in the afternoon. But no, school was okay. I went to William Parker, which was an all boys school actually. It was a sports college at the time, so that was the reason for me going there. But enjoyed it, and we had a decent team, to be fair, and we done pretty well locally. So enjoyed it. Yeah, school was okay, but it was more of a process to try and get through it than actually enjoy it.
Did you settle immediately on football then? You say you were all playing lots of sports. Was it always football the main choice for you?
No, it wasn't actually. It was football, but it was tennis as well. So I was pretty handy at tennis when I was younger as well.
And yeah.
Used to go to a local club called The Green and had lessons and used to do pretty well in tournaments, played at Devonshire Park in the junior tournaments and stuff, and actually got to the finals with my cousin there in the doubles.
Oh, cool.
I think it was under 13s maybe one year, but I had to make a choice. The tennis coach was pretty honest with me. He said, look, I know you love football, I know you love tennis, but you're going to have to make a choice because you're going to have to go, not full-time, but you're going to, for tennis, you're going to have to train 4 or 5 times a week if you really want to have a go. And I would have chosen football, if I'm honest, because I loved it more, but from a financial point of view for my family as well, probably couldn't afford to do tennis. So it was an easy choice in the end, and the right one.
So football-wise then, who did you grow up supporting?
Really, to start when I was younger, anyone that Paul Gascoigne played for. So whoever Paul Gascoigne played for, I supported. So I wasn't a loyal supporter. But I would say as soon as I was part of the School of Excellence, which it was called then at Brighton, from about 11 years old, we used to get tickets to go and watch Brighton at the Goldstone. So I was suppose I was a Brighton fan from 11 onwards.
Can you remember the first match that you went to?
I can't remember who Brighton were playing against, but I remember it was a 2-2 draw at the Goldstone, Brighton 2-0 down, and Julian McDougall scored 2 goals, I think, and scored a late equaliser, if I'm right. And we used to sit in the south stand, I think, which is the north stand, which is the standing area, and we were the opposite stand, like the family area. And I just remember going crazy. And one day, my dad, like me jumping up and trying to run down, and my dad pulling back. So that's my first memory of being there. And I used to love the Goldstone, proper stadium, proper atmosphere, and the pitch used to look lovely. Unfortunately, never got the chance to actually walk on it or actually play on it, which is a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, what are your memories of the Goldstone? What was it about the sights, the smells and everything that made you like the place, and also I guess maybe giving you a bit of a spur on to say that this is what I want to do?
All of it, really. I mean, it was a proper atmosphere. We used to park at the Greyhound Stadium and walk down to the Goldstone, so you get involved in all the fans. And even in them, you know, the club was struggling. We were in so-called League Two, that it is now. But still get decent crowds, still get people supporting the club. Yeah, like the smells, the atmosphere, proper fans, it was proper football, hustle and bustle of it. And just loved it. I mean, that I was hooked then. As soon as I knew I loved football, but as soon as I felt an atmosphere from a crowd or a player scoring and you could feel that emotion, I was hooked. I knew that's what I wanted to do. Whether I could do it, I don't know, but that's what I wanted to do.
So you chose football over tennis. So when did you find out yourself really that you had some sort of talent for the game, and what was your progression through to then joining up with Albion?
I'd probably say from a reasonably young age, from about 10 onwards. I mean, in the old days, you used to be able to do this. I was playing like a year up, maybe 2 years up sometimes. So obviously felt as though I had some ability. Went through from a local club in Hastings to Spartan to like South East Sussex, then to Sussex, playing for Brighton. But it was always, I must admit, I felt quite confident locally, but when we were coming through at Brighton from probably 11 to 16, we didn't have the strongest team, really didn't. We used to play West Ham and QPR. I mean, the first game I played for Brighton, I think under 11s, under 12s, we played West Ham away, and it was like playing against men. And I think we lost about, it must have been something about 9-10-0. And it was a real eye-opener, thinking, wow, I'm way off this. And I was small growing up anyway. I didn't grow until I was probably 15, 16, really. But I thought, oh no, I'm going to struggle it. Am I actually going to make it? But I think it was more the physical side of it. Then they were men. They were, I don't know why. I think London boys have always grown bigger. I don't know why. When you were younger, playing against London teams, they were always massive, physically quick, physically strong. So I knew I had some ability, but I knew I had a long way to go if I was going to fulfill being a professional.
Yeah. So can you remember those feelings though when you first joined Brighton?
Yeah, I mean, 11 years old, we were actually playing in a South Sussex game in Eastbourne somewhere, and there was a Brighton scout there, and he actually picked, I think he picked six of us to go from the game over to Seaford. We used to train, there used to be a School of Excellence in Seaford and a School of Excellence in Worthing. So we used to go to the one in Seaford, and there were six of us went over, and it was almost like a 4-week trial. So we went for a 4-week trial, turned up, and you could tell the difference straight away, the tempo, the quality of player. So it's basically all the best players in the area. But yeah, I think all six of us that went actually got taken on, and you signed like a year's contract. I mean, the club's very different now, and every club's very different now. It wasn't set up the best way. It was kind of like signed here on this piece of paper, whether the piece of paper meant anything or not, as like a registration. But I remember the first year I was there, and it went okay, and we used to lose a lot of games, but I felt okay about myself. And then it all changed. The coaching staff changed, everyone's changed. And actually, for some reason, I got lost in like the network of it and didn't actually get to sign on. But actually got asked back for another trial, got signed on again. And that's when I first met someone called Vic Bragg, very instrumental in my early development. Brilliant coach. He was a school teacher, I think, at maybe Ardenline. But he was really, really good and really enjoyed working with him from about 12 till 16. And then he came and joined the youth team as well when I was in there. So great bloke. But that was my first memories of training at Seaford.
What was it about Vic then that really helped you?
If I'm honest, he really cared. He really wanted the player to do well. And I think that came from him being a teacher. Technically, he was really good. He spoke really clearly. His instructions were very simple, but very clear. And everything was with the ball. Everything was with the ball, all technical work, improving your technical side of your game, passing. And I loved all that. And I, from an early age till I finished my career, I used to love training, even sometimes more than games. So I had a connection with him. And he was, do you know what? He was a really nice bloke as well. And he wanted the players to do well. And he would take extra time to help you improve if you wanted to.
So you was it 17 when you made your debut?
Yes, yeah.
How do you remember that?
If I can remember my debut, I think it was at home against Cardiff, maybe in like the, it used to be called the LDV, I think, or something, or the equivalent of the Paints Trophy. Yeah, I think it was a late call. I think we played on the Tuesday night, and I was training with the first team on the Monday. I think Mickey Adams was the manager, and he was resting a few of the players. So a few of us in the youth team thought, oh, you know, we might get called up to be in the squad or on the bench. But now I was training on the Tuesday morning, and I got told I needed to go home and get my suit. We had to wear suits 10 days to the game. So I had to go all from Brighton, obviously I didn't drive. I had to get the train all the way back to Hastings, get my suit, get a train all the way back to the ground, and then just coming on for the last 10, 15 minutes, I think. And I was buzzing, nervous, really nervous, but really excited. But back down to earth really quickly. I had to play a reserve game at Norwich the next day. I think we lost 3-0 on that. So it was a good moment, but brought back to reality. We're playing a reserve game and getting taught a lesson by the Norwich players the next day.
Yeah, I've spoken to Adam Virgo about this as well, but the squad's obviously full of extremely strong characters. You knew who the leaders were. You're a midfielder. So how did the likes of Charlie Oakway and Richard Carpenter take to you?
Honestly, taken to me. I don't know if they took to me straight away, if I'm honest. A younger player coming through, obviously a bit of competition for their place. And in them days, football was very different because players didn't earn as much money as they do now. Your appearance money in them days were probably sometimes almost as much as your basic wage. So it was so important for a player to play. But I'm not saying they didn't like me or anything like that, but they saw it as competition and stamped their authority on me, put it that way.
Yeah, a bit of tough love.
A massive amount of tough love. But do you know what? I thank them for it now because it helped me. It really did. At the time, it was really difficult, I'm not going to lie. And it tested me at times. But I must admit, during my career, if I look back on it now, it really helped me. It made me become a man quicker. It helped me because I learned so much off them players as well. I mean, their determination, the way they were fairly aggressive, I'd say, they just taught me how to win football matches and how important it was. And I think that's kind of been lost within the game now. It's the importance of what a match day means. So they were brilliant for me. But at the time, it wasn't easy.
A lot of players would have responded, I imagine, in very different ways. It's worked for you in the end. As you say, you can look back at it now and say it was good. But do you think there were some players that just maybe couldn't handle that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're spot on there. I think it's one way or the other. I think you're kind of like, a bit like life, it's survival of the fittest a little bit, and it's sink or swim. And I was just one of those people that just like, look, whatever happens, I'm going to give it my best to make a career in this. And whatever I've got to do, I've got to do. But yeah, some players are not necessarily like that. I think that was one of my strengths. I was just had a goal and I was going to get there. But yeah, I remember younger players that didn't respond well to it and struggled with it. And you could see their confidence being knocked, which would then go on into their actual real life and the football side. So I see why there's a lot of help now and the way football's adapting and is different now. And I get that. But I still feel, and this is just my opinion, that there's a need for both sides. I really do. But yeah, it was some players didn't take to it and probably could have had careers if maybe they were around in these times, to put it that way.
I mean, it sounds like quite an old school squad. That sort of atmosphere seems to have died out a bit now. And even in the mid-2000s, there probably weren't a lot of squads like the atmosphere at Brighton.
No, the atmosphere, it sounds like I'm playing it down. The atmosphere at Brighton was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I mean, the group of players that they had were so strong together and they were successful because of the way they were. And people probably don't appreciate it. They're actually really good players. They were really good players, but they just had such a strong mentality. And they didn't achieve what they achieved by, if I'm remembering rightly, as I remember, it was back-to-back promotions. There was a relegation and then another promotion, pretty much with the same squad. And players coming that got put together by Mickey Adams when the club moved back to Withdean, to the Brighton area. And they were so determined as a group and so together. Yes, there was arguments between the group and yes, it was competitive. And I'm not saying that every player loved each other because that would be a lie because they don't. But I would say every player respected each other and every player knew their role within the group. And it just really worked. And there were some really strong individuals that led that group. Yeah. And they deserve a lot of credit for the success.
It ended up being quite a while until you became a first team regular following that debut, obviously. And you had a couple of loan spells away. And then suddenly, it looks like it was very sudden anyway, that you were a regular in the team straight away after promotion to the Championship. So what happens with Mark McGee in pre-season to change that trajectory?
The season we got promoted from League One to the Championship at the Millennium Stadium, the beginning of that season, I was actually on loan at Aldershot and then Leighton Orient. And then I came back and then started training with the first team again, blah, blah, blah. And got offered, my contract was up, but got offered another year. But then we got promoted and that year actually got taken down to 3 months. So I actually got taken, offered a year and actually said, look, we're not going to offer you a year anymore. We'll give you 3 months to come back in the summer, get yourself fit and we'll see how we go because we're going up a level. You've not played at that level for a while, blah, blah, blah. And I was actually going to sign for Crawley. I had a meeting with Crawley. I was going to go and play a regular first team player at Crawley, which I think they were in the National League now sort of thing. But no, I remember speaking to my mum and dad, and my mum and dad said, look, you're either going to go to a club in the National League or you can sign for a club in the Championship. Yes, it's 3 months, but you're giving yourself a chance. Go back for pre-season, sign for 3 months, get yourself fit. And I think that's the first time in my career I got myself really focused. I really understood that, all right, this is my life now. This is my profession. And just got myself really fit and just went for it and had a good pre-season. But then didn't really get a sniff for the first 3, 4, 5 games. We didn't start that well. And then I came in, it was a Friday afternoon. We were doing set pieces. Didn't have any inkling that I was going to play. Wasn't anyone, hadn't been on the bench, hadn't been in any squads. Mark McGee just named the team and said, we're doing set pieces and my name was in it. And I had to actually say to, I think Bob Booker said, look, did he mean to say my name? Because I've not been in any squads on the bench, not even played or whatever. He's like, yeah, you're playing tomorrow. I was like, okay. And I was nowhere near match fit, but I would say I probably didn't look back from that moment. That was my opportunity that I think every player gets, and I would like to think that I took it.
Yeah, definitely. You end up having a great season, playing a lot. The team stayed up, of course. What was life like at the club at that time under Mark McGee?
It was good. It was good. Do you know what? It was real. I'd put it that way. It was real. We knew who we were. We were a small team at the time in the Championship. We were a really small budget, not a huge squad, a mixture of older players that have been really successful in the years past, some younger players coming through, and a mixture of, I think it was a time, Leon Knight was there. So there was some, Leon Knight, I mean, had ridiculous ability, one of the best players in division that I played with. But yeah, it was an interesting time, but it helped us because we knew who we were. And we knew we were in with a chance of staying up. And we had a focus. It was just stay up. Look, can we stay up? There was no like, let's get to 10th. Let's try and get in the playoffs. Unrealistic. And that helped us. We managed to do it. So it was an enjoyable season. And being part of it just made me, you know, that was my first real experience of playing first team football, being understanding what it really meant.
We'll get to your favourite game a bit later on. But so aside from that, do you have a particular memory which stands out? Maybe a match. It might be a moment on the training grounds from that first spell at Brighton.
It would have to be being made captain under Dean Wilkins. I mean, when Dean Wilkins told me that I was going to captain the team, and I just assumed it was a one-off game. I mean, he'd come in as caretaker manager. He made some quick changes, brought a load of youngsters in, and it worked. But coming from the local areas in Sussex and playing for Brighton and then being told I was going to captain the club meant a lot to me. And I always loved, and I always felt when I wore an armband, whether it was at Brighton, Southampton, a couple of times at Leicester, wherever, it made me a better player. And I don't know why that was. Maybe if I had to, it felt as though I had more responsibility and I needed to do more. But yeah, being captain was a proud moment, and I'll always be grateful to Dino for that.
Yeah, we're just touching on that then. I mean, you were made. Yeah, you've captained at several clubs. Do you consider yourself to be a natural leader?
No, honestly. No? In terms of what people would assume a natural leader would be, was in shouting at everyone, getting everyone to listen to them. I could do that, but I don't think that was natural. I think more mine was leading by example.
Right.
I would probably set the tone every day in training. Mm-hmm. I would make sure training was done properly, is in... not as in laying down the law verbally, but just showing an example, right, this is how it's got to be done. This is how I'm going to train them. So follow me.
We will return to your second spell at Brighton. I'm interested to know what led to your move away to Colchester. How much was there a temptation to try and hold on, see if you can keep there, see if you can stay till the Amex?
Yeah, it really did come into my thinking. And it was a difficult situation because... it's a funny one. I was really enjoying my football at Brighton at the time. We were playing under Dean Wilkins. There was a lot of young players in the team. We were playing a different brand of football. Dino obviously played in Holland and things and wanted to pass the ball, play out from the back. So he was just introducing that. And I was really, really enjoying my time and playing. But I was a young lad. I was ambitious. I knew there was some interest in me, as every player would do through agents and different things. And I wanted to test myself as hard as I could. And I wasn't going to Colchester Stars, I was going to Sheffield United.
Okay.
So that was half the reason of a potential move. But it was under Brian Robson then. He was manager of Sheffield United. But he got sacked, so that never happened. And Colchester came in, and they were in the Championship at the time. They were building a new stadium. Teddy Sheringham was there, different players. The owner was ambitious, and if I'm honest, I think Brighton wanted to sell me. I think they were happy to sell me. I think the club were obviously juggling finances at the time. We just bought Glenn Murray in, and they paid a fee for him. So I think they were quite happy, and right, maybe rightly so. They were happy to bring Glenn in and pay some money, but sell me to make some money. So it probably didn't come out that way in the media and different things. I was probably it said that I was, I don't know, leaving for money or didn't care about the club or I was disloyal. But if I'm honest, I think it worked for everyone. I think the club were happy to sell me and I wanted to go and test myself in the Championship. So from within, I think it worked for everyone. And if I'm honest, the finances really weren't that different. It was nothing to do with money because Brighton had actually offered me a new deal. Colchester were paying me a little bit more, but it wasn't huge. I think it came down to the fact that I wanted to get back to the Championship. And that was an opportunity and it might not come around again. So I took it, but yeah, it was really hard because I was settled. I was living in Hastings and I was settled. I was with my wife. We didn't want to go, but I made the decision.
This is Football, the Albion and me with Richard Newman.
While we can't be at the Amex right now, we're all missing that match day experience. But you can bring part of that home for the rest of the season with the award-winning Piglet's Pantry, official pie supplier to Brighton and Hove Albion. You can order online for delivery across the UK and listeners to this podcast receive a 10% discount by placing your order quoting Football, the Albion and me by sending a message on their social media channels or emailing info@pigletspantry.co.uk. Get the best home match experience possible with Piglet's Pantry.
Follow Football, the Albion and me on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
And then you moved to Southampton. Dean Wilkins was there and as Alan Pardew's assistant. How much of that a factor for you to move there?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like there was a bit of... I didn't speak to Dino for a while, which was strange because he was my youth team manager. He gave me an opportunity... as captain at the club, and I had so much respect for Dino. I know Dino a lot. He's been great for my career, and I'd say he's a friend. He's still a friend now. But I probably didn't leave Brighton on the best of terms, really, because he wanted me to stay, sort of thing. But obviously, he knew the situation at the club. Different things went on. But then we obviously spoke again, and he gave me a call out of the blue, sort of thing, and said, look, I'm assistant at Southampton. Alan Pardew would like to sign you. I'd had a decent year at Colchester the year before in League One under Paul Lambert. Scored a few goals and was playing well. Had a few other offers from the Championship actually at the time. But I wanted to work with Dino again. I really enjoyed working with Dino. Probably the best coach I worked under. Really, really good. Really, really thorough. Excellent in what he does. And I knew a club like Southampton wanted me. So I turned down to go to the Championship to go to the bottom of League One on minus 10 points, which is quite strange because I left Colchester and we were top of the league.
Yeah. Do you think it was Dean that wanted to sign you and convinced Alan Pardew?
Yeah. To be honest, Dino would have had a major effect in that. Mate, Dan Harding was there at the time and I think it was a similar thing with him. Dino, it would have worked something like Alan Pardew gone, right, we need some centre midfield players. Dean Wilkins, I think Stuart Murdoch was there at the time. You're right, Dino probably would have had a big effect because I actually signed for Southampton without even speaking to Alan Pardew. Right. I met him the next day when I'd signed. He obviously knew I was signing, but I hadn't actually personally spoken to him. I just dealt with Dino. So yeah, he probably had a major influence on that.
You had a good time there at Southampton. You obviously captain again there. When the opportunity came to return to Brighton on loan, how easy a decision was that? Because as you say, the way that you left and maybe the perception, and I do remember the goal celebration. You're scoring against Brighton as well for Southampton.
Yeah. One of my regrets, I must admit, in my career. It wasn't a difficult decision, I must admit. I was very aware that I was coming back to a bit of fire, I must admit, because of that. And it was a silly mistake. It was one of those things that I've done interviews, I've came out and I've apologised. Yeah, I apologise for it. I hope it's in the past. It was, if I'm honest, I was at Southampton, we'd won the Paints Trophy at Wembley, I think 2-3 days before. I was probably still a bit hungover, to be honest, at the time. So it was one of those, I mean, I celebrated like I scored like, I don't know, I'd scored from 30 yards and the crossbar and gone in. It barely touched my head, I think, with a header. But just, it was, from my point of view, it was just friendly banter. I was getting a bit from the fans, so I just give a bit back. But I know it was wrong. And I had a few people tell me that it was wrong, ex-players at Brighton. So, but coming back, I actually got a phone call from Dan Harding, who Charlie Oakway was assistant to Gus then, or coach under Gus Poyet, and just wanted my number and wanted to have a discussion about whether I'd be willing to come back. And again, that was a very difficult decision because we just had back-to-back promotions at Southampton. We got to the Premier League. Granted, probably wasn't going to be first on the team sheet anymore. And just had an honest conversation with the manager at the time. And he said, look, I don't think you're going to be a huge part of this. So if there's an opportunity and you want to go, we'll do the club will help you to try and get a move. And it wasn't the easiest move, I must admit, because there was a bit of rivalry between Southampton and Brighton. And
yeah.
I don't know if the owners got on that well and the managers didn't get on that well. So it wasn't the easiest move. It took a while. And then at one point, I didn't think it was going to happen. I was actually going to go to Charlton. They were in the championship under Chris Powell, and that was actually going to be, I was actually going to sign at Charlton on a 3-year deal. But I wanted to go to Brighton. I wanted to go back. I wanted to play in the stadium for one, because I'd been kind of promised that since the age of 15. I wanted to go back because I felt as I was a better player and I wanted to right some wrongs. I wanted to prove that I was a good player, that I was a championship Premier League player now, but do that in my home club. So I wanted to move, but it took a while to go through, put it that way.
So you got back to Brighton. Did you feel, what was the response like from fans, from your perspective, to try and win them back?
I think they were great with me. They didn't. I think they were wanting me to prove that I was worthy of coming back and that it was a good decision by the manager and the club. But do you know what? They give me a chance. They give me an opportunity. They didn't. I was very conscious that, and I spoke to Andy Naylor about this. I was like, I want to do an interview. Can I do an interview to come out and just kind of apologise about the goal celebration, the reasons behind it? I did that. He was open to do that. So I'm grateful for him on that. I remember the first game we played Sheffield Wednesday at home, and I was a little bit nervous about it, thinking, okay, when my name's read out, what's your reaction going to be and stuff? Because I was at the time, I was never one for really reading newspapers, really looking at comments and stuff. I was just like, right, people are going to think what they think, whether it's good, bad, inconsistent. It is what it is. So I was nervous, I must admit. But no, they give me a chance, and I'd like to think during that season that I proved that the club were right in bringing me back.
So how much of a change was it when you came back to the club in terms of its setup?
Huge, huge. So different. But in some respects, it's the same. The stadium obviously was different. The club was different because it was a club with a it was a club with a budget now for a start, and some money to invest in players. But we were still training at Sussex University, which was good because it kept us grounded. We were playing in a beautiful stadium every other week at home at the Amex, but we were still training at Sussex University, where it was close knit. The changing rooms were close. The gym was close. The pitches were okay most of the time, but not great. It was a different club. You could sense it was an ambitious club now. They were like, right, okay, we're going places. We want to try and get out of the championship into the Premier League. So I was sold that by Gus as well. I mean, I enjoyed working under Gus Poyet so much. He's a brilliant coach, so passionate about the game. And when I met him before I signed, I was like, right, I want to play for you. And I knew Adam Alab really, really well. I'm good friends with Adam. And he spoke so highly of Gus. He was like, look, you're going to really enjoy working for him. So it was a very different club, but still had that same feeling of a tight-knit togetherness. And I think that helped having Charlie as a coach. He really implemented that. So he was really good value for his position at the club.
That was the season Albion went out to Crystal Palace in the playoffs. So we subsequently had the odd fallout from that. Before we get to that bit, I remember Gus criticising the use of clappers in that second leg, that it was a change of atmosphere at the Amex and didn't help. It just didn't feel the same stadium. Yeah. Did the players genuinely feel similar?
It'd be lovely to use that as an excuse, wouldn't it, really? But I don't know. At the time, I didn't walk out onto the pitch and think, oh, this clappers are not helping, or this feels different, or I just think we unfortunately lost the game. I think we didn't play our best, but I think before Zaha scored, I mean, basically the difference was Zaha turned up for like 10 minutes and that was it really. And we had an opportunity. I think Ashley Barnes had a header or a volley cleared off the line before they scored. If that had gone in, it would have been different.
And you went close in the first leg,
I probably should have scored. Yeah, I was about to say, I should have scored in the first leg with a header really. I went a bit safe. I should have gone for it, really. But we, do you know what? Look, we won. We drew 0-0 away at Palace, and we came off that. We were really confident. We were like, what a result for us. And the fact that we were going back to the Amex, I think we'd won the last 6-7 games in a row there. We were on really good form. Maybe that didn't help us. Maybe we went into the game too relaxed. Maybe we thought, right, they would just turn up, we'll win the game. It didn't feel like that. But if you're asking me, did the clappers have any way in us losing the game? Honestly, I'd probably have to say no.
And of course, there was the incident in the Palace changing room. Let's just call it Poo Gate, since everyone else does as well. It seems to be their own bus driver that actually was the culprit. The whole situation, very weird. Also, why would anyone at Brighton do that anyway? Really strange. It's just bizarre. So when did you get wind? That's probably the wrong word for the situation. that Palace were not happy about something.
Yeah, we did before the game. We knew something because one of the stewards came in and spoke to the manager and the coaching staff, and we knew something had happened. Didn't really think much of it, really. But I remember speaking to a couple of players that were playing for Palace a couple of years later. And I remember telling me that Ian Holloway obviously knew what happened. He knew it was known at Brighton. He knew it was the bus driver. Okay. So he knew the actual situation. But he used it to his advantage. He was like, right, I'm going to motivate the players here. I'm going to motivate my players here to say, look, Brighton are doing this to us, they're disrespecting us. And he motivated them to, I don't know, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. They won the game, so maybe it did. But he used that as that. He knew the situation. We didn't really. I suppose we probably had a laugh and a joke probably in the dressing room about it, laughing about it. But yeah, we knew about it, but didn't really think much of it. It wasn't part of the game. A bit like the clappers, really. You can write conspiracy stories afterwards and say it was this reason, that reason. Look, we went onto the pitch, we lost the game. That was it, really.
That ended up being your final game for the club. The atmosphere after the game, could you tell that it was all over for Gus?
Yeah. I couldn't tell it was all over because it wasn't definite, but after the game, he kind of informed us that there was a couple of things changing and that there were some conversations going on, and he wanted things a little bit different. Whatever, they didn't go into the reasons. Knew he had a meeting with the chairman. We actually had a meeting the next day. We called us in after the game. We had a little bit of a team meeting. It was arranged anyway, because whether we won, lost. But he went into a little bit more detail of the situation then. It's quite emotional, really, because he'd been there, and I'd say he really set the foundations of what the club is now. So he'd done such a good job, I think, personally, and I love playing under him and the group of players we had. I just think he was, and rightly so, like everyone in life, I think in what we all do, he was just really ambitious, and he wanted to push the club forward. And maybe there was people that had different ideas or different objectives. I don't know. But it was quite emotional, because we'd come so close to achieving something. Lost against Palace, which made it hard. We weren't going to Wembley, which we thought we were going to. Believe that we should have got automatic promotion, because I think we drew 12 games that season, maybe more. And a couple of them were like last-minute goalkeeping errors, where I think away at Birmingham. The ball slipped through the goalkeeper's hands, and then a White Forest as well. So, and I think we only missed out on automatic by 3 points. So if them two goals hadn't gone in, we would have gone up automatically. So I think there was a bit of regret. So he did inform us of what was happening. Yeah.
Then you went to Leicester. So you helped them get promoted, played in the Premier League. How much was that a huge ambition realised for you?
Well, it was my ultimate ambition as a kid. I always wanted to, I started at Brighton in League Two, so the Premier League seemed a long, long way away. So it was almost ambition to try and get to the Premier League and play in the Premier League. And I missed out on that at Southampton, which was gutting and heartbreaking, because I'd had such a good journey there. But then I obviously got the opportunity to come to Brighton, so that helped me. Thought I was going to do it at Brighton again when getting to the playoffs. Thought I'd get to the Premier League here. Didn't happen. And then went to Leicester, and again, just I knew the quality of the squad there, the players we had, and they just, Nigel Pearson was actually really good. I really, really enjoyed working under him, just because he's the proper man, proper has a presence, really good coach as well, but really good man manager. And he's the one quality Nigel has, he's so honest. and he'll just tell you what it is. And he told me when I signed, he said, look, probably not actually going to bring you in to be the first name on the sheet to play every game. We've got a real talented squad here. He was like, we haven't got the right mix. The mix is wrong. I've got too much talent. I've got too much, what's the word? Too many egos sort of thing. Not in a bad way, but too many players thinking that they need to play and I can't control that. So he brought myself in. He brought Kevin Phillips in. He brought Gary Taylor-Fletcher in just to balance it out and bring a bit of know-how in to how to get promoted. And it really worked. And I think I played maybe 30, 40 appearances that season. Probably only started probably 5, 6, 7 games, but I played a part in every game. I used to be the player that, because we won so many games, I used to be, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes to go, right, Dino, warm up, you're coming on, let's see the game out. So that was kind of my role, really.
Right.
But then I actually played more in the Premier League than I started more in the Premier League than I did in the Championship. Yeah. So there we go.
Yeah. And how happy were you for your former teammates when they went on to that miracle season?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. And this is going to sound silly, but obviously the season before, when it's called the Great Escape in Leicester, but when we stayed up in the Premier League, I think we won the last 7 out of 9, 8 out of 9 that season. We suddenly realised that we were a good team and that we could play at the top level in the Premier League. So I knew going into the next season that we would have a really good season. But didn't think we were going to win the Premier League, don't get me wrong, but knew that we were very competitive, and to win like 8 out of 9, 7 out of 9 games is, you know, that's top four finish. So we really thought we could have a good season. And it was, do you know what? It was strange because Nigel Pearson left in the summer. Nigel Pearson obviously departed. We didn't know. We started pre-season with no manager. Claudio Ranieri didn't come in until probably the back end of pre-season. But no, I was so happy for him because they are such a good, humble set of players and people. And it just really worked at Leicester. And the atmosphere for them 3 seasons I was there was brilliant.
So after a spell at Sheffield United, you retired. And as you said earlier on, that was your decision. What was the reason to step away from the game?
Oh, that's a good question. Do you know what? I think I was one, obviously, look, hindsight, I'd love to go back to that situation now and make a different decision. That would be my first thing I'd say. But at the time, I wasn't physically tired. I was mentally tired. I'd been playing full-time since 16, 17. Don't get me wrong, I loved every minute of it and would go back and do it all again. But I didn't have a good time at Sheffield United. It didn't go well for me personally. I personally didn't perform. The team didn't perform. The expectation was really high in League One. I think we finished 10th or something. So we failed as a team. My contract was up at Leicester. I just had my youngest son. So I decided to take, I don't know, which was the wrong decision. I decided to take 3 or 4 months out of the game. Just thought, right, I'm just going to have a 3 or 4 month period out now. And then I'll try and get back in. And I turned a few offers down, which I should have taken in hindsight, but didn't. And then just kind of drifted for a bit and couldn't say I couldn't get back in, but the right opportunities didn't come up. I was just mentally drained, I think, and I just needed a bit of a break. Now, I know, what, 3, 4 years on, being in the big, big wide world, the reality of the real world, it's, I should never have done that. I should still be playing now. I'm only 37. I'm still fit. But there we go. You make decisions and that's it.
So do you think there is maybe a way back then past, I mean, we talked about Worthing earlier on. Do you think there's even a possibility of you playing at a slightly higher level than that, with respect to Worthing, obviously?
You ask any footballer, that feels like I could still play in the Premier League, but I don't know.
Are you looking into it though?
I'd love to. I'd love to get the opportunity. Whether even the opportunity for someone to say, look, just come in and train, come and give it a go. I'd love to. I'm one of the sort of people that if you put a challenge in front of me, then I'll do my very best to achieve it. Now my body might not allow me. I might go back and I might get injured. I don't know, but I'd like to try. I feel as though I've got something that, and a bit like the Brighton thing, something I need to put right. I finished the game too early and I've had opportunities to get back in over the last 3 years. And for whatever reason, haven't taken it, wasn't maybe in the right mental place or whatever. But I feel good now. I feel fit still. So I feel as I can do it, whether that's true or not, or that's the real reality, I don't know. And at what level, I don't know.
What about long term? What do you see yourself doing?
I love my fitness. So I've always loved my fitness. I think it was one of my strengths in my professional career. I was always like, right, you might be better than me as a player, but you won't be fitter than me. So I'm just starting up my own sort of, I'm qualifying as a personal trainer at the moment. So I'm doing that as we speak. I'm trying to, I would love to set up my own business, my own fitness business, helping ex-players. I'd like to do that. So I think a lot of things where you get players, and I've come out of the game now, I've experienced it personally, that it's difficult. It's really difficult. And one of the things that can really help is exercise. Now, I'm not saying you have to stay an extreme athlete and keep to ridiculous diets and discipline, but exercise can really, really help, especially with the mental side of coming out of the game and being more responsible for your own life. Because when you're in football, your routine's set for you. You're told what to do, where to be, when to be, what you're doing, at what time. It's all mapped out for you. So I would like to, I've got a passion, I'd like to help ex-players. But I mean, just in terms of fitness, keeping people fit and keeping people healthy can really help them stay mentally strong. So that's my long-term goal.
Now, with each guest, we have a quick game called Jumpers for Goalposts. You're the captain in this situation. Five-a-side team, nice sunny park. Of all the players you play with throughout your career, and they don't necessarily need to be from Albion, who would be your first pick?
Okay. Do I have to have a balanced team, or can I just go all out?
You can have a rush goalie if you want. It's your team. You're in it.
I would say, look, I'll do all the donkey work, then I'll get the ball back for everyone and give it to the better players. I'd have to say the first name on would have to be Adam Lallana. Technically, the best player I've played with, best player I've played against as well. Great bloke, passionate about the game. His drive to be a footballer and to win is more than anyone I've seen, even in training. And you probably maybe that wouldn't come across to people, but he loves the game. And both feet, he's a bit of a magician, really. And I had 3 years at Southampton training with him every day. And yeah, it was when I wasn't on his team in training, it was a tough morning.
He's out of contract this summer, so if you can put a call in for Brighton, that would be great.
Well, if he could, it'd be hell of a signing.
Who are your other three?
If I was going to put Teddy Sheringham in, it wouldn't be Teddy Sheringham when he was at Colchester.
No, you can put Teddy Sheringham in if he's had an influence on your career. You've had an association with him. He can go in.
Well, I don't know if I would, though. I'm going to have to stick. I'll have to put Jamie Vardy in. And that's hard because obviously I played with Ricky Lambert as well, who was unbelievable. Played with obviously Teddy Sheringham. Played with a good player. Played with David Connolly. Played with Leo Ajoa. Leon Knight was, I forgot Leon. I mean, on his day, Leon's probably, Jesus, who am I going to put? I'm going to have to put Vardy in. I have to put Jamie Vardy.
Okay. Who are the other two?
This is hard, you know, really hard. I mean, I could put Riyad Mahrez in. I could put...
Mahrez would be a really good five-a-side player, surely.
You'd need two balls because, I mean, you just let him play on his own because he'd just do it on his own. But, do you know, he was a really good player, and I can't even pronounce his name probably, Vicente at Brighton.
Yeah, yeah.
It's close with him because on his day, I mean, in training, he was brilliant. So, and I want to put a Brighton player in, so I'm going to have to go him, I think.
Yeah, he's been a popular player throughout this series.
Some player, by the way, and a really nice guy. Didn't speak much English, I must admit, but there was a lot of Spanish players, so he probably didn't need to. But no, what a player. If you could get him fit, oh, what a player.
So there's not much balance here.
I haven't got a goalie in yet either.
or even a defender. Have you played with any defenders that you could definitely stick in net every now and again?
Do you know what? I'd have to go and net myself, wouldn't I? That's what it is. In this team, I don't think I'm good enough to play on pitch, so I'm going to have to go and goal. Do you know what? I'll go rush goalie.
Okay.
And we'll stick Matty Upson in. Good player. I mean, I played with him at Leicester as well. He came to Leicester when I was there, and I played with him at Brighton. Under Gus, when he came in January, he made a huge difference. A huge difference. Because one, obviously, you would have seen how we play. We like to play out from the back, very possession-based. But he made the balance because he was left-footed as well. So left-footed centre-half, playing alongside Gordon Greer, both so comfortable on the ball. And Matty Upson was quick. And we had him at the twilight, at the end of his career. But he was still quick and he was brilliant in the air. And he was brilliant as well. Around the dressing room, he was really good. And he obviously played for England and Arsenal and West Ham and big clubs. So, yeah, Matty Upson, good player, really good player.
Okay. So your final team then is Dean Hammonds, rush goalie, yeah. Matt Upson, Adam Lallana, Vicente and Jamie Vardy. I think that would do quite well.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. Hypothetical situation is that you're taking over Match of the Day for one episode only. They've told you they can run extended highlights of one match from your time with the Albion. Which one would it be and why?
It'd have to be the year we stay up in the Championship at Wivedean, the 2-2 draw against West Ham. I scored two goals, two headers. So it actually means I'd be in the highlights for once, which would be nice. But no, it was an important game. It was towards the end of the season. West Ham were obviously going for promotion. They went 1-0 up. We got it back to 1-1. They went 2-1 up and we got it back to 2-2. So I scored two headers. And I think that was the first time in my career where I actually felt important. I actually felt as though like I was an important part of the team. I actually got some appreciation maybe from people around me, including players. I got some recognition from the fans, which was nice. But just the feeling as well, and scoring them two goals and the noise of the crowd and the atmosphere and what it meant and the atmosphere in the dressing room afterwards that we could actually achieve as staying up. And so I'd have to say that game.
If you could influence one thing about the game now, what would it be? Something that niggles you maybe?
It would have to be, I don't know if it's necessarily about the game, but it's part of football. And that would be part of, I've got no problem with younger players earning lots and lots of money. I don't think there's any problem with that because that's the industry they're in. They've worked hard to get into that position. And what the club pay them or sponsorship pay them is not their issue. That's someone else paying them the money. And what they're going to do is say, no, not at all. They're going to say, yes, of course, because it's their life, it's their profession. They've got to provide and they've got to build a life for after football. Mm. The one thing I would like to see happen is that at a young age, maybe a lot of that money goes into a trust. So it's still their money. They just can't access it until a certain age that they're responsible enough to. And every player is different. You'll get younger players that are responsible, that are mature because of the life they've gone through. And they've had to grow up quickly. But I'd like to see them protected a little bit more and keep that hunger in them. Because I think money does have a major part to play on your hunger and your determination. And also I'd like to see the clubs help them with that. So there's a lot of financial advisors out there that can give you really good help. And there's a lot of financial advisors out there that can't give you really good help. And they're doing it for all different reasons. And I'd like the clubs to take a bit more responsibility and recommend financial advisors. Who do the clubs use? Who do the owners use? Who do the CEOs use? Who do they use to control their money? Because they're wealthy people. So maybe they can pass that advice on to the younger players and give them a guidance, not saying they have to do it. And then you just get players concentrating on their careers. They're not thinking about what money can I earn out of sponsorship or what can I do on Twitter or how can I make myself look more presentable because it's going to earn me more money. They can just go back to being footballers. So I've ranted on a bit. That's one of my niggles, to be honest. But I think it's really important.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. A one-minute shootout, quick-fire questions. They're not all about football. I'll fire some at you and you just give me the first response. So here we go. Goldstone with Dean or Amex?
Amex.
Tea or coffee?
Tea.
In the same season, would you win the FA Cup or avoid top flight relegation?
Win the FA Cup.
Book or film?
Book.
VAR or no VAR?
No VAR.
Boat or train?
Say that again.
Boat or train?
Train.
Old Wembley or new Wembley?
New Wembley because I played there.
And travel the world or lays on the world's most idyllic beach?
Travel the world.
Cool. Leaving aside sport, what do you do to relax?
Spend time with the family. I mean, I love being a dad. Being a dad and to my three children is, I spend all my time with them. So I'd probably say the last 3 years, I've probably dedicated my life to my children. So traveling around, being there for them, being present in their life, that's the most important thing to me now. And I'm very grateful that I've got healthy, happy children. Yeah, I love them dearly. So I'd say they're my life.
And finally, a couple on the Albion now, and you don't have to be polite about it, but what's your honest professional summing up of the Albion at the moment at the Amex, and what's their long-term realistic potential?
Oh, well, one, I think it's a brilliant football club. I think where they've come from and what they've survived to where they are now, to having the Amex, to having the training ground, to being an, you have to say they're an established Premier League club now. But do you know what I really like about them? They've kept to the values and they've kept to the way they want to play. Under the manager now, he plays a certain way. And he wants to entertain the crowd. He wants to try and win games. But doing that in the Premier League, which is, you know, it's the hardest league in the world, the most competitive league. And the club sticks to its morals. It doesn't go and spend huge fees on players. It's trying to bring younger players through now because they have got a good academy. They've got the facilities to breed players. So I think it's a fantastic football club in a great area of the country. How they push it on, I don't know. Is it a club that, I don't know, maybe the fans would like a bit more excitement of, I don't know, staying up on the last game of the season or going down and then coming back up the next season. Maybe that would be more exciting, but everyone wants to be in the Premier League. So do they invest more money and buy more players? That's a risk. That doesn't always work. Do they become a club that breeds homegrown players again? Do they become a cup? Do they go for cup runs? Do they try and win a trophy? I don't know, but I think what they're doing is brilliant and I think they've got a real model for other clubs to follow.
And lastly, do you have a message for the Albion fans?
Thank you for always supporting me. Thank you for giving me the opportunity when I came back to the club. And I love my time playing there. It was one of my proudest moments in my career to captain the club. And I just love my time at the club. And I hope they're all safe and well and the club keeps progressing and they keep enjoying their football.
Dean, it's great to hear your stories and your experiences at Brighton. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure, mate. My pleasure.
Great to get some time with Dean and best of luck to him in whatever he does next. Do check out his Instagram fitness account, Dean Hammond Elite Fitness. If you enjoyed this, please do spread the word and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, share on Twitter and Facebook. You can also listen to previous episodes, all designed so that they're largely not time sensitive. You'll find interviews with players like Ashley Barnes, Elliot Bennett, Peter Ward, Gary Nelson and Tommy Elphick. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week. Bye for now.